This morning's opening words come from Chief Seattle. So please take them in as the earth receives this beautiful rain. Teach your children what we have taught our children, that the earth is our mother. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. If men despise the ground, they despise themselves. This we know. The earth does not belong to us. We belong to the earth. This we know. All things are connected like the blood with which unites one family. All things are connected. Whatever befalls the earth befalls the sons and daughters of the earth. We do not weave the web of life. We are merely a strand in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. I extend a warm welcome to our visitors and guests, and take a moment to introduce yourselves to someone you may not know or say hello to someone you do. Now, I would like to invite everyone here to consider the many ways that you may be just like a potato. Some people never seem motivated to participate, but are content to watch others. What are they called? Spectators. Some are always looking to cause problems and really get under your skin. They are called agitators. There are those who are always saying they will, but somehow they never get around to doing. We call them hesitators. Some folks spend a lot of time sitting and peering into the garden. What are they called? Meditators. There are those that try to maximize their crop yields while reducing expenses. We call them computators. Whether you feel like a waxy, new-skinned potato or a wrinkly one sprouting sprouts everywhere, feel welcome here to explore what encourages the green urge in you and others. Whoever you are, whoever you love, whatever you worship, may your love grow healthy and make new connections here and outside. We welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. Pat.
Last Wednesday, at the monthly meeting of UUs at Meadowlark, the suggestion was made to mention at the next Sunday the importance of flower gardens. I got that job and immediately dashed to the public library, and I found this wonderful little book, Rhapsody in Green, The Garden Wit and Wisdom of Beverly Nichols, who is male. The Brits, you know, do strange things with the words. So I thought, well, this is just what I need to read to the fellowship about gardens. So here are just a few of his words of wisdom. When I am in a garden shop, I feel like jumping on the counter and making a speech because people oughtn't to be allowed to buy beautiful, precious things such as seeds and bulbs if they are only going to maltreat them. So there. I always think flowers know what you are saying about them. If I see a scraggly lupin, I like to pass well out of its hearing before any adverse comments come to it. How do we know what torture it may be suffering? It surely can be no more pleasant for the lupin to have to appear with tarnished petals than for a woman to be forced to walk with a dirty face. By the way, I'm having real trouble with my glasses today, so that's why I'm struggling with seeing these words. While making a bunch of mixed flowers for a border, I sometimes pick one which I don't really want at all, in case it should feel neglected. A habit which no doubt carries sensitivity to the pitch of sickliness. But the world wouldn't be much worse off in these days if a few people were a little more sensitive. However solitary you may be by nature, however avert to entertaining and giving parties, don't you find that there are times when sweet peas, as it were, send out their own invitation to tea, where the irises inform you in no uncertain words that they will be at home in the afternoon. It is only to the garden that time is a friend, giving each year more than it steals. We both know, you and I, that all people in gardens, the last word would be, at last the world would be at peace. I think these are, is that yours?
Now let us sing our opening hymn, The Garden Song, which you will find in the insert. Please stand as you are able and sing along.
Ready?
Oops.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below, till the rains come tumbling down. Pulling weeds seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rains come tumbling down. When your grows short or long, season with a prayer and song. Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her loving care. Old crow watches from a tree. God is hungry, eye on me. In my garden, I'm as free as that feathered thief up there. Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. Gonna mulch it deep and low, gonna make it fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, please bless these seeds I sow. Please keep them safe below till the rains come tumbling down.
Please pay attention to the announcements in our order of service and to all this other stuff that's coming forward. And I would like to call special attention to the UUA consultant who is coming to do an assessment visit, which will help us firm up and clarify our vision and so that we can do better and better work in the world. So please read that, and if you can join us for any of these, please do so. Now, let us take time to pause, to let everything settle down, all the things that we have left undone and have done, all the things that need to be done. Take a moment to feel in your heart those things that bring joy and those things that bring grief. And the mix, the wonderful, fertile mix. If there is someone who would like to share a personal joy and or concern, this is the time to do so now.
I'm Shirley Hobrock, and I have two joys. One is we have two new members. They've been members here for a couple weeks, but Jen and Matt Campbell, will you please stand up so everyone can identify you? And the second thing is the joy of my life, which guess who that is? Bryce and I are celebrating our 29th wedding anniversary today.
All right.
Good morning, Anna Franklin here. I had a phone call from Katie Page this morning. Some of you may know her. She comes occasionally with her father, Tom Page. She wanted me to tell you all that Tom has been not feeling too well lately. And he was not able to come this morning, but she had spoken to him yesterday and said, you know, what do you think it would be that would help you to feel better? And he said, well, the one thing I can think of is if I could get to UU, I'd feel a lot better. So he misses us.
Jim Chanteau. I have actually four joys today. My three children are here. Well, hardly children, are they? and my brother is here. There was a celebration yesterday, actually all day long, and last night as well, for my impending retirement. The only thing I noticed, and I've commented, they've heard me say this, but it all seemed to be in the past tense, you know. I had done this, I had gone there, I had found whatever. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm still present tense.
I want to introduce my guest, my niece Rita DeCourcy from the Netherlands, and her traveling companion Marlene, Van Doren. She's from the Netherlands now, but grew up in Australia. So they're visiting for a few days. And we hiked the Kansas yesterday.
Michael Oldfather, and you may have noticed that Slavomir is not here this morning. He is suffering from a very serious ear infection, and the medication to treat it made it worse as far as the rest of his health is concerned. He had he expects to be here tonight. His students are doing their spring recital here at 6, not 7, as it said in the newspaper, but at 6, and expects to be well enough to be here for that. And his students want him here, too, so that he can grade their performances. Since he is not here with us for the offertory, he had planned to play Scriabin's prelude for the left hand. He didn't know it, but he thought he could learn it and play it with his one hand tied behind his back. Best I can do. Steve Mull is missing. Take his place. So instead, we are playing for the offertory the third movement of Mendelssohn's piano trio in D minor with Slavomir and the other two members of the Atta trio that he tours with from time to time.
My name is Ryan Meyer. I have a joy that I actually happen to be holding in my hand here. My wife, Katie. This is little Liam Robert Meyer. Gave birth to him 10 days ago. 10 days ago, he was 5 pounds, 6 ounces. When we took him home, he was 5 pounds, and he has since gained back his birth weight, so he's healthy and everything's going great. So.
I just want to thank the Chanteau family for providing the treats today for celebration.
All right.
Ann Marchant, I just was lucky enough to have a visit from my brother this weekend. He hasn't been to Manhattan since my husband died 3 years ago. He has a fibromyalgia and other disabilities, but he was able to come with his three daughters for some time this weekend. Really enjoyed it. So,
I'm Terry Franz. Tomorrow is my last day at work. I'm retiring from Fort Riley in the medical in the laboratory after 30 years of work, and I'm looking forward to it. My retirement.
I want to thank Ms. Corey for setting up the children's garden.
Oh, yes.
I'm Sabrina Boker. I got a joy and a concern. I got a joy that my birthday is coming up on May 4th. I'm going to be 42. And a concern, my brother is apparently not going to be able to finish college. Something about a new law that got passed saying he's at the end of his funding. So hopefully if he can get in the National Guard, they can pay for it. So.
Okay, and if everyone can see, we do have a children's garden out there, which is a great joy. I'll talk more about it later, but it is wonderful to see that. It's a great joy for me, and will be a great joy to watch it grow. So for all those joys and concerns that we've shared, let us remember that there are joys and concerns that we all carry in our hearts and minds. And let us be mindful of those as well as the ones that have been shared. So, Corey.
Thank you. Let's have all the kids come up. We're going to meet on this side today so we can admire our garden as we talk. Come on up. Good morning. So yesterday we spent some time planting a garden. We had the help of Matt and Jen Campbell, who built the bed. That was not something I had done before, so thank you guys so much. That was great. Yes, round of applause, please. And then Michael Nelson got us dirt from, it's called Valley, right? No, right across the street here, that was good soil. Sorry. Well, there's dirt in there and mulch and really good stuff. And then we put all of that down. And then we put in awesome plants that the Benella family had started for us and that Elaine Moore at Southside Gardens had started for us. So let's all go take a tour. Let's just take a little quick peek. And then nature was so wonderful to us today, and it rained and it rained and it rained. So you see our little sprouts there? It looks really good. So we planted tomatoes and basil and peppers and eggplant and kale and Swiss chard. Come on over. Okay. So I thought we might talk a little bit about the difference of vegetables that come out of a garden and vegetables that you buy at the store. So yesterday I went to the farmer's market with Owen and Sloan and Sam, and we bought some asparagus. Okay, how does this look to you? Yum, right? Who'd like to smell it? It smells so good, right? It's fresh and delicious. Yummy. Good, right? Mmm. Connor, do you want to smell it? No, okay. Then we had to go to Target to run some errands, and they now have a grocery store in the Target. Very exciting. And I bought this asparagus. How does this smell? Oh, you can't smell it. Hmm. It's in a package. Yeah. Where do we think this was grown? Mexico. Yummy. How did it get here?
Shipped.
It was probably shipped here. Yeah.
Package and delivering.
Packaged. Yep, that's right.
Maybe a truck.
Maybe a truck.
Plants grow in a garden.
That's right, Jake. They do. So, did this grow in a garden? It did, right? It grew in a garden, right? The same way that this did. But are we more excited to eat this? Yeah. Right. And are we going to even be more excited to eat our vegetables? Yes. Now, this fall, the 3rd through 6th graders did a project about ethical eating. And then they put on a snack for us. You remember they made this awesome spread of food? They discovered that there are some things that just don't grow in Kansas, right? What don't we have here? What can't really grow in Kansas?
Chocolate.
Chocolate. Yes. What else doesn't really grow so well here? Do lemons and limes and oranges grow in Kansas? No, but are those good things to eat? Yes. Yeah.
Well, there are special types of trees in Greece that will only grow in rocky areas.
Correct, sir. So, there are some things that we have to buy at the grocery store because we don't grow them locally. But what I think is going to be great is that we're heading into this glorious season where we get fresh fruits and vegetables all summer and into the fall, and we're going to have our own. And so when we have a choice, it's great to eat what comes right out of the garden nearby because it tastes fresher, right, than this. No offense to the Green Giant, which claims it's fresh, but it's a little bit less fresh, right? Okay. We're all going to meet now to talk a little bit about the plant sale that's coming up. We have starter plants for sale after the service today that have been started by Elaine Moore at Southside Gardens and the Benella family. So if you'll join us in the Alsop room following the service, each starter plant is $1.50. We have tomatoes, bell peppers, jalapenos, we have basil, we have Swiss chard, we have kale, we have eggplant. And it's going to be a great sale. I've gone to all the liquor stores in town to get their beer flats for easy carrying home. No one really blinked an eye. It was fine. So please join us after the service, and we're now going to go get ready, okay? All right. Okay. Go now in peace. Go now in peace.
May the spirit of love surround you everywhere. Help us to be the always helpful gardeners of the Spirit, who know that without darkness, nothing comes to birth, as without light, nothing flowers. Let us give so that our good works of this in this community may flourish and spread.
Hello. So nice to see. Oh, what a cute baby. So nice to see another wave of children making a garden. And I don't know, probably most people don't get around to this side of the fellowship, but there's a garden there that children long since grown up and moved away started that garden. Well, I'm supposed to tell you about why I love to garden. Last Christmas, my husband Dick gave me the most wonderful Christmas present ever. He researched my family genealogy, beginning with my father's grandpa named Mean Bob Kale. Dick discovered that my great-great-great-grandma had the exact same name as me, Sylvia Kale, and that she was half Tuscaroran woman from North Carolina, just like me, with two sons, but I have three daughters. One of them was my great-grandpa. This is a roundabout lead into explaining to you why I love to garden, a proclivity I believe was passed down to me through the Native American connection in my dad's family. Yesterday, I attended, for the third time, the Flint Hills Wisdom Keepers, a gathering of Native American elders from the Americas intent on transmitting their wisdom to any and all who care to receive it. One elder told me that Native American languages are structured to express relationships with particular emphasis on verbs. So I will tell you through relationships with a particular emphasis on verbs why I love to garden. For my father and my Aunt Louise, gardening was much more than plopping some seeds or plants in the ground to save a few bucks on the food bill. It was a set of practices through which they expressed their intimate knowledge and attachment to the natural world. I share their love of the natural world and strive to emulate their methods in my gardening practice in my yard, in my organic plots in the Manhattan Community Garden, and as grounds chairperson here at the UU Fellowship, and in the herb garden I started at my workplace, People's Grocery. These practices include improving the soil through composting and hand tilling, protecting the soil microflora and moisture through mulching all seasons, including winter, which apparently no one else does that in the community garden, cultivating fruit-bearing trees and shrubs, providing brush close to the ground, and maintaining seed heads through the winter to provide food and shelter for wildlife like rabbits, lizards, toads, birds, snakes, insects, and worms. Maximizing diversity of acclimated perennials and herbs and allowing extra berries and vegetables to support butterfly and moth larvae, birds, and wild and domestic bees and other insects. Gardening provides me a link with ancestors known and unknown and a vehicle for building and maintaining friendships through passing on seeds, cuttings, transplants, swapping ideas, transmitting practices, and sharing produce, encouraging the novice gardener. I greatly enjoyed our UU spring cleanup this year when I got to know some of our new wonderful members like Matt Campbell, who I never really talked to before, and lots of other people, and happily sweated along with some older UUs. Bonds of friendship bloom with UUs I've gotten to know better in the community garden. Kathleen Tenona, Harriet and Al Yonke, Anna Franklin, John Extel, and Sybil Perkins, who, well, by chance, I found mucking around with me in the rain this morning in our gardens. And my dear Sam Lacey, who we don't see here as often anymore, who can't bear to kill a single seedling and who let my girls work beside him in his beautiful Garden of Eden, just like I used to next to my dad. And there are also so many wonderful Unitarians who are responsible for starting all our fantastic beds, our wildlife island out on the north edge, and just Martha Slack, who could hardly walk. She was missing a leg from a train wreck when she was a girl, and she planted so many plants that are still maintained in our flower beds. I've also gotten to know many people whom I never would have known otherwise, who have completely opposite religious and political views from me through gardening, like my next door neighbor who I started gardening with in the city garden, and we gardened together for many years. Every year we cancel out each other's votes, but we love each other dearly and we've shared so many happy times discussing how to raise our children and just all kinds of things. My garden is lush with olfactory, tactile, and gustatory richness, a source of nutritious and delicious food. Through gardening, I am mindful of the cycle of life, the turning of the seasons, the complexity of soil, the character of individual sticks and stones, the drama of the weather, and the drama of the human lives that intersect mine in the garden. Gardening is also a lot of work, but also an excellent mode of exercise. I think my three daughters, have absorbed my love and knowledge of gardening, which has been very important to me. My garden is a place of refuge, a place to reflect, and a place of solace, healing, constant revelation and inspiration, and fulfillment. I'm intensely happy in my garden. Down below you can see some things that have been inspired by working in my garden, and right now asparagus is one of the first things that I pick in my garden. I have at least three varieties in my garden. And I even have a female plant, which most people immediately throw out because they're not as productive as the males. They have to put some energy into making berries. But I keep the berries because the wildlife like them. And I leave my plants up all year till the next spring to provide some brush for the little animals to have cover. And here are some chives and beautiful sage, which I love this beautiful bouquet that somebody brought. I love a blue and green bouquet. What's more wonderful? And then I discovered these are some shallots that my father, who's been dead for over 20 years, gave me these. And I made this incredible discovery when I pop some of these off because they make sets at the top and expend some extra energy. And some of them I want to encourage the bulbs to grow. So I pop these off. And depending on the diameter, they each make a different note when you pop them off. So maybe someone will write a symphony or a piece of music. My husband, maybe. So I don't know. That was just a latest discovery. There's something every time I go there. And today I have tons of strawberries. And here's my asparagus lady. And this could be one of you. Always fertile thoughts popping out of your head. Once my neighbor and I used to take turns going to pick our garden. And one day I came back and she said, "Any asparagus?" I said, "No, it was only this big." 2 days later, she came back to my door, and this asparagus was this tall. So, thank you.
Well, the green urge is sure in Sylvia. Thank you, Sylvia, very much. I'd like to share a reading from The Bucolic Plague by Josh Kilmer Purcell. "What do I do with this, Jason?" one of the summer interns at my ad agency asked me. He was holding his mug of coffee in one hand and staring quizzically at the produce dangling tentatively from the other. "You eat it," I answered, sweeping up the scattered dirt that had fallen onto the counter in the agency's kitchen. A crowd had gathered around the basket filled with earliest bounty from the Beekman garden. One of the account executives, Julie, was holding an egg with the same perplexed look on her face. Don't you have to do something to eggs before you eat them?" she asked. "Well," I answered, "you can fry them or boil them." "No, no, no," she interrupted. "I mean, are they safe? Do we have to sterilize them or something?" It would have been easy to make fun of my colleague's lack of knowledge about where food comes from, but I was actually quite pleased at the number of them checking out the array of handwritten words. Beekman Free Farmers Market. Most New Yorkers barely grocery shopped, let alone knew the details of the journey their food took before it reached them. Rinse it off and take a bite," I instructed Jason. "Go on." He held it under the running faucet for a moment, as tentatively as if it were going to wrap around his wrist and climb up his arm. He shook off the excess water drops and took a minuscule nibble with his front teeth. "What is it?" he asked, obviously not sure if he liked it. "It's a radish," I answered. He immediately broke out into a wide grin. "Oh, yeah, it is," he responded, as if he was finally able to reconcile the sharp taste in his mouth with his memory of a salad. "I've never seen a whole one," he said. We do not weave the web of life, we are merely a strand of it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. As the human population has grown, we have wreaked havoc upon the earth, brought extinction to more life than we can count. In the last half of the 20th century and somewhat earlier, we began to sense the damage we have done to the earth and to ourselves. We have begun to recognize how diversity of life creates health and how monocultures and corporate farming require increased use of pesticides, herbicides, non-organic fertilizers. They're the cause of major erosion and loss of soil. It contaminates our drinking and groundwater, depletes our aquifers, contributes to air pollution, cancer, lung disease. So it is important to know where that radish comes from and what you're putting in your mouth. I, like Sylvia, have been blessed with a family who has loved to garden, and I can remember the first time I lived in a house that wasn't my parents'. That spring, I thought, oh, I gotta plant something. So I got a big soup spoon and went out in the backyard and dug up a whole bunch of area and planted peas. And all my roommates thought I was nuts. Of course I was, but that's okay. And in 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, maybe 2 months, there they were. Wonderful. Not many of them, but they were wonderful. Do you know where your food comes from? How healthy it is? Who grew it, how far it was shipped, how it was packed. For most of us, there is a huge disconnect. All of us probably have to shop somewhere other than locally. I mean, where things are grown and brought in locally. It's just the way our lives are structured. But do we take a moment to remember that someone brought that food to the grocery store, unloaded it, and before that someone had picked it, and before that someone had planted it, and before that someone had tilled it, and before that, there's all these befores. Do we take time as we eat something to ever recognize the amazing legacy that we're putting in our mouths? And if it is one that will help us grow healthy, or make us sick. This raised bed out here comes from recycled wood from a 19th century barn. It's heart of cedar that Chuck and a friend reclaimed, and now it's repurposed. 2 years ago, they were going to shove it down and burn it. This wood is wood you cannot find unless you pay a very high price for it. And we have it here for our children's garden. So it's a great joy to see this wood not destroyed, but used again. Of course, it'll crumble and die over time, but that's okay. Has anybody heard a recent National Public Radio's Backseat Book Club that was on, I think, Thursday of last week? It's a book club where each month a book is chosen and kids across the country are invited to read along with NPR this book. And this month it was Seed Folks by Paul Fleischman. Seed Folks takes us into the heart of a city, a slum, a rough area where there are gangs and where there are knife fights and where people are beaten and robbed. And in the midst of this densely packed city where all these apartments are. There are so many people living in these apartments packed in and barely even recognizing each other, even though they may have seen them for 2 years, hardly ever saying hello, everyone fearful and isolated. And in one of these apartments, a little girl from Vietnam named Kim lives. Kim never knew her father. And so she remembers from some time past that lima beans were one of her favorite foods, and they had some lima beans, and she went out into the empty lot, which was filled with junk and rats and all kinds of garbage, and it just stunk, and she just sat on the side of a refrigerator, and she had her little spoon, and she dug a little bit, and she planted those beautiful lima beans. And luckily, the refrigerator was there because she planted it a little early in the season, but that refrigerator blocked the cold wind. And they grew. And out of that growth, suddenly other people started to enter the garden. And they began to remove the rusted cars, the old stoves, the things that no longer are worth keeping. And they found a new home for it. And in time, all of the people in these apartment buildings, not all of them, but many of them who are immigrants, started to plant food they remembered that they ate as a child that brought them back to their land of origin. So, the garden and seed, folks, is like a big green magnet. It pulls in immigrants who yearn for vegetables they can't find at local markets. It beckons the wounded who find a reason to live as they watch life sprout from little seeds. And it calls out to the elderly who find themselves in memories of the soil. As their garden plot grows, their hearts grow bigger and their worldview expands. There are still hard times in this rough neighborhood, but each eggplant and tomato is a little victory worthy of celebration. So that history, those ancestors, I'd like to now invite Ron Parks to come up and share a little bit about, he'll tell you.
Good morning. Michael asked me to talk just a bit about the horticulture of the Kansas Indians. If you were to go about a mile and a half to the north and a little bit east of north, just on the north bank of the Kansas River, you'd be at the site of the Blue Earth Village that the Kansas tribe as a whole inhabited from about 1795 to 1829. And outline beyond the edges of this village, and it's about 120 lodges, so it was a good sized village, about 1,500 or 1,600 people lived there. There were fields tended by Kansas women and girls, and they would raise corn, beans, pumpkins, squash, watermelon, and then later potatoes. And they were very skillful at what they did. We don't have documentation about the Kansas, but we know their neighbors, the Pawnee, had over 15 varieties of corn, some flour corn, some sweet corn, and these varieties matured at different times of the season. So, and they kept these varieties pure by separating the patches of the varieties of corn with the squash, the beans, the potatoes, and then in amongst the corn patch, which was the primary staple of both the Pawnee and the Kansas, they would plant beans. They would hoe the corn patch at least twice, and then the beans would help to shade the weeds as the tribe and this applies to both the Cans and the Pawnee, would go west on their summer bison hunt, come back after 6 to 8 weeks or so, and then begin the harvest. They planted the corn in mounds, low mounds, about 18 inches in diameter or so, and they would put 5 to 7 seeds in each mound, each hill, and then they would, the mounds were separated by about a step, and so you would have this kind of checkerboard effect, and they did all the cultivation by steel hose by this time. Before, it would have been the scapula of bison or elk, but by 1795, they were trading with Europeans. Just because of the limitations of time, I'm going to extrapolate just a couple of observations here. For one thing, the practice of cans of gardening was a religious act, as most daily activities were with Native Americans. And there is a prayer chart that a Kansas holy man put together in 1882-83 that has 27 symbols arranged around a square, kind of like a Monopoly board. And then these are minor deities, these symbols, that the Kansas would offer prayer songs to. And, of course, you have things like wolves and the moon and the four winds and owl, and there were 10 prayer songs offered to the bull buffalo. But there would be marks beneath each one of these emblems. And there were two that pertained to gardening directly. One was the corn stalk, and there were 3 prayer songs offered to the corn stalk, and that was their planting songs that they would remind themselves to offer to the deity of the Wakanda of corn at the time of planting. And they also had 9 prayer songs that were offered to cooking. And the image that was associated with the cooking prayer songs was a man carrying a bucket of water to the fire where it would boil corn. So this is all part of the daily moment-to-moment existence where they would offer songs, plant, eat, prepare the food, and so forth. The other thing I want to conclude with is the American Indians of the Central Plains practiced what has been termed a gift economy rather than a market economy, and gift exchange was extremely important, both intra-tribal and inter-tribal gift exchange. And it's really interesting to come across what the agents wrote about this particular tribe, who was one of the poor tribes, actually, by the time that the whites began to move into this area. In 1839, the Kansas agent was a fellow by the name of R.W. Cummins, and this is what he wrote in regard to the Kansas and their practice of gift-giving corn. It's with considerable confusion and concern that I've learned that the Kansas have been sharing their very limited corn supply with most any tribe that asks for it. And 6 years later, and I'm going to end with this, this is what the same fellow, R.W. Cummins, said about the Kansas. "I consider them the most hospitable Indians that I have any knowledge of. They never turn off hungry white or red if they have anything to give them, and they continue to give as long as they have anything to give."
So to give whenever you have something left, when it's needed, is that not a deep spiritual human practice? And gardening, anybody who has put their hands in the soil, pulled out the weeds, hoed it, dug it, And like with this soil here, the horse manure comes from a half a mile down the road. The compost comes from that house built in 1870, the blue one over there, where there is a letter they found in the wall from two young girls, two young women, one going to Bluemont College, one living in Chicago. And they were the one that lived there complained that she couldn't study because the train was always going by. So even back in the 1870s, what you would think would be bucolic was filled with this roaring noise. So there's this incredible mixture of things that we have to contemplate as we cultivate our own spirits, our own selves, so that we can handle the complexities that we live in this life and not be fraught with the kinds of energy that slams us down or takes us flying off like a crazy person, but to help us cultivate that balance. Always cultivating the balance. Gardening is in my blood. I can remember visiting my Uncle Harold's farm outside of Lindsberg, a half a mile from where my father was born, a mile from where I was born. And I can remember we were coming from Chicago, and he had this funny-looking ferny thing coming out of the ground everywhere. And I said, "Uncle Harold, what is that?" He said, "Those are carrots." I said, "What? Those aren't carrots?" And he said, "Yes, they are." And so he said, would you like me to pull you one?" So he did. I said, "Oh, yeah, you're right. It is a carrot." And then he said, "Would you like to taste it?" I said, "Isn't it dirty?" "No," he said, "it's not that dirty." So he just kind of wiped it off. And then he said, "Taste it." And that taste lingers in my mouth to this day. I have never tasted a carrot so good, so alive, so rich with everything that brings meaning into my life today. In eighth grade, I won the first prize in the science fair, which is probably amazing to many of you, but I did. I did a project on photosynthesis. I was always in love with green things. I can't remember what the project was. It was probably just a bunch of stuff I put together so it looked complicated and seemed to have a wow factor, because I kind of figured out that that's what the judges were looking for, the wow factor. But really, I was in love with green things. And if you remember what photosynthesis is, it directly or indirectly produces all of the energy that makes our lives possible. The sun is grabbed by the leaves, and it's made into glucose or carbohydrates, which feeds these magnificent trees, the green grass, all of the brush, and it'll feed the basil and the eggplant. And everything we wear and touch and use is directly or indirectly responsible because of that life-giving energy of the sun. It all comes from there. It's simple. It's not complicated. And that's an amazing thing to contemplate. How complicated do we make our lives sometimes by thinking, oh, there's this, there's that, there's this, there's that. Sometimes we need to have that point where we look up and say, oh my, look at that incredible sky and have that April sun just shining on you. Don't you feel as if you are growing and that something gets centered in you as you take a deep breath of fresh air that is coming from that process of photosynthesis? An amazing thing. And it's also interesting to recognize that photosynthesis has a light-independent factor, which may not have anything to do with the lack of the sun, but it does. So there is a part of photosynthesis that does not rely on the sun. It relies on the dark. So as we contemplate our lives, we often want to reach up and reach out and to grow and to flourish, but sometimes what we need to do is let those roots grow deeper and deeper and deeper. It is said that on an average oak tree that there are over 5 million root hairs. 5 million root hairs reaching, and they squirrel, corkscrew, squirrel down. They don't go straight down. They have to turn, like the sun. I mean, like the planets around the sun. This amazing turning deep down, 5 million. And if, probably most of you know about the Land Institute, which is one of the world's great treasures, which is in Salina, Kansas, started by Wes Jackson. I'd like to read their vision statement. When people, land, and community are as one, all three members prosper. When they relate not as members but as competing interests, all three are exploited. By consulting nature as the source and measure of that membership, the Land Institute seeks to develop an agriculture that will save soil from being lost or poisoned, while promoting a community life at once prosperous and enduring. At once prosperous and enduring. So by trying to create strains of weeds and other kinds of things that we eat that are annuals and make them into perennials so that you are not having so much energy go into biofuel and all the other things that it takes to grow those things that we eat, that there is a more natural way to do it. As Wes Jackson says, the prairie does it all. You don't have to do anything to the prairie. The prairie feeds itself. It's always renewing itself. Always. So what does that say for a person? What do you do in your life to always be in a state where that you are able to find something that renews you when all else is going to heck? Where do you go inside yourself? What have you cultivated to help you to become prosperous and endure when all else seems to be against you, when you feel tired and worn out? A healthy ecosystem has lots of diversity and is less likely to be seriously damaged by human interaction. So the same thing goes for a community. The more diversity we have, the stronger we are. So whether or not you believe in God, or if you find that you cannot believe in God, to have that mix is an incredible gift to us all, because it takes all those root hairs to support the growth and the flourishing of any community, of any nation, of civilization. Because there are many ways to find coherence and wholeness in this world. But if we don't cultivate mindfully, and not use all the biofuels that just burn up and create toxicity and create global warming, there is a parallel on the personal level of personal growth and interaction with the one you love, how you celebrate anniversaries, how you celebrate the ending of a career so that a new career might start, or the first asparagus to come up in the season. Wonderful things. Did you know that a single spade of rich garden soil contains more species of organisms than can be found above ground in the entire Amazon forest, rainforest? A single spadeful of rich garden soil, healthy garden soil, not compacted, not filled with all kinds of herbicides and pesticides and inorganic kinds of fertilizers. In one spadeful, there are more organisms that can be found above ground in the entire Amazon rainforest. One shovelful. taking care of the earth, growing your own food, or buying it from someone we know who does connects us directly and powerful to the people who live in the same place we do. So if you don't go to the farmer's market, I would invite you to do that so that you can get to know the people who grow the food that you can eat. And remember, food that is grown in healthy soil that doesn't have a lot of herbicides and pesticides on it grows vegetables that have a much higher content of trace minerals and all the kinds of things that support healthy immune systems and bodies and minds and spirits. So if you haven't gone, do go. Support your local grower. Buy some of the plants out there. Even if you live in an apartment, you can put it in a 5-gallon bucket and drill a hole through it, and you can grow a tomato. It'll be your own tomato, and it'll be better than the ones that you find at the large grocery store. They won't be rubber balls. I can remember as a child how I would go look at other people's yards and would ask our neighbors what they were growing. And often they would give me seeds or plants. And I would always be bringing them home to our garden and planting them. And my mother goes, "We've already got too much." I said, "No, we don't, we don't, we don't." And there was one guy named Wally, whom I think I've shared with you before something about. Wally was the son of German immigrants, who was, in the days that I knew him, would have been called slow. He was about 6'5", and in their yard they had apple trees, and the kids always liked to sneak in and pick off an apple, but Wally would be out there in a flash. "Get out of here! Get out of here now!" And then we would run away laughing. And one time Wally caught me by the collar, and he said, "Why are you taking my apples?" I said, "Because I love them." And so he said, "If you want them, you should ask me." And so he gave me some apples. And then he said, "Have you ever seen geraniums this big?" He had geraniums in pots that he had saved from the year before, that were now this big. I brought that home so proudly to my mother. I said, "Mom, Mom, look at this beautiful geranium. It was just filled with blooms and vigor and health." My mom says, "Oh, that's way too big, and cut it back immediately." I said, "Mom, that's my geranium." Anyway, so what environment do you best thrive in? Where do you recognize the multitude of connections that help you know yourself in your fullness? Where do you do that? Do you do it intentionally? Do you take the time to ponder how you are connected to all that is, that each strand here is connected? And connected to what's out there, what's on this floor. It brings us into the center of this galaxy when we do that. Because at some point, you always have to honor the life-giving force of the sun. And to honor that is to honor yourself and to honor all people. When my family moved back to Kansas from Chicago, all of us were in high school. I had just graduated, and my sisters were getting wild, and I was off into my own thing, and the family was kind of falling apart, as they often do when kids get that age, turning into adults. But the garden my father planted brought us all back together, and I'd just like to share a closing image. One evening, after picking a 5-gallon bucket of peas, we sat in lawn chairs in the front of the house, the rock garden behind us, and the sun was setting through the hedgerow, and we were shelling those peas, and someone would say, I have 7 in my pot, how many do you have in yours? And then the silence would just roll across us as a caress. And it was the most beautiful time of working together. We froze most of the peas, but had fresh peas that night. Gardening can bring families together in a powerful way that registers across time. Let power enter your life and register across time in every way that you can. So we are at the end of our time, and we have another song to sing. Let us sing 123, Spirit of Life. Stand as you can or want to, and let us sing together. My friends, let us be thankful for the wonder of life, each of its strands that connect all things. Let us be thankful for all that we grow, all the ways in which we grow and share. Let us be thankful for the power that allows and encourages us to grow. May we never lose touch with the simple joy and wonder of spring. May the green urge thrive in us all. Go in wonder. Oh, well, we will be having a Deepening UU session at 12:15 here today. If you're interested, please join us.